Hello, and welcome to episode 60 of Cavalytics. Cavalytics is a show about the NBA's Cleveland Cavaliers with a special focus on exciting statistical analysis. The Cavs have just defeated the Toronto Raptors 110-92 in Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Semifinals. Game 2 is on Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern. I am Keith Carter, a longtime Cavs fan currently dealing with the unusual and oppressive 70-degree heat here in downtown San Francisco. I have all my windows open trying to get some crosswind going, so if you hear some dogs barking or, more likely, emergency vehicles in the background, now you know why. My co-host is Arnav Chabra, a PhD candidate at MIT, and from my perspective, an expert in pretty much everything pertaining to NBA statistics. How's it going, Arnav?
What did you say the temperature was?
It is 75, which is like as hot as it gets.
It was like 48 this morning here.
Yeah.
I actually had to get my jackets back on.
It's not going to be long now before you're getting into the 90s. But yeah, it's hot here today.
That was a fun game.
It was a fun game. I was a little bit confused by how that game made me feel. Like, I spent the entire game on Twitter sort of complaining about the Cavs.
But what's new, right?
Yeah, I guess. But yeah, like, look, they played awesome. But I don't know. I it was somehow unsatisfying for me.
I think that's because if you look at the game flow, it was a roller coaster, right? Like, they didn't step on their feet, or they didn't step on their throats at one point and just not let up. They actually kept letting up, and then they would do the whole thing all over again. So I can see why that was an annoying game to watch. But I mean, overall, they were still very good, so.
Yeah, I mean, look, winning by 11, and I mean, look, that was an 11-point
it's
game.
It's more like a 20.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there was actually some garbage time in this game. I think this was the first game that LeBron James hasn't finished in the playoffs so far.
Yeah,
the Raptors went on a little run there, but it was sort of meaningless. I guess I'm just so afraid of, you know, what's coming down the road that unless the Cavs, like, blow teams out by 40, I'm not satisfied. I feel sort of broken, I guess. It's weird.
Yeah, I mean, 20-point lead is pretty good. I mean, like, last year, the Cavs, I think, had a plus 17 net rating against the Raptors in the six-game series. And, yeah, I mean, tonight it would have been that if they hadn't gone to garbage time. And to be fair, they had garbage time last year, too. But I remember they actually increased the lead in garbage time in a couple of those games. So.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the Cavs won game one last year by, I think, 31, right? Like, it was 115-84, I think. And then they won game two by, I think, 19. I think they won the first two games by a combined 50 points. And that series won six games. So, what do you make of today's game? What did you see?
I mean, LeBron is amazing. That's obviously not something new or unique to me. But also the fact that I think Kyrie looked a lot better today. He had the 10 assists, which is great to see. Because one of my complaints of his performance last series was that he just wasn't passing the ball even when... And I'm not saying, like, he needs to be a primary playmaker like LeBron. But if he can add that component to his game consistently, where at least he's a threat to pass the ball... Like, that actually adds another dimension. And LeBron played off the ball today a lot. That's why he only had four assists.
Yeah. Basically, whenever Kyrie was in the game, he was playing point guard, which is pretty unusual.
And I mean, it's good to see because it makes LeBron a rolling threat, and it also makes LeBron a really insane finishing threat near the rim.
Yes. Did you catch the replay of LeBron's dunk off the glass?
I did. I unfortunately didn't watch the first like 5 or 6 minutes of the game because I was walking back, but I didn't watch the replay of that.
Yeah, that was a pretty spectacular dunk. But maybe only the second best dunk of the night. You were back to see Shumpert's dunk, right?
Yeah, I saw Shumpert's dunk right before he had the air ball.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, Shumpert's going to shump.
But he was good, though. I don't want to take that away from him either. Like, Shumpert, I thought, was pretty good in non-garbage time.
I actually decided to look it up because Shumpert has some, like, fairly hilarious travails dunking. So how many dunks do you think he took and made this year?
Taking and making? There's a dunking percentage?
Yeah, I looked it up.
Okay. He took, let's say... 15? No, actually, no, that's too low. He took maybe 30 dunks this year.
He took 15, actually.
Okay, 15, so I was right the first time.
Yeah, you were exactly right.
Maybe like 9 or 10.
Yeah, yeah, he made 11. The year before, he was 12 of 17, and the year before, he was 20 of 30. So I don't know what that sums to, but probably like 75% or something close to that.
Probably pretty low, right, compared to like most players, NBA player.
Yeah, like I think LeBron James missed like 3 dunks all year, for example. Like, yeah. And he's taking hundreds and hundreds. Yeah. He is not a high percentage dunker. Now, look, it's still a very high percentage shot, but... Anyway, yeah, that dunk today, and yeah, just Ibaka diving out of the way made it particularly satisfying.
Yeah, Ibaka looked pretty scared there.
He did. I would be scared. I mean, Shumpert cocked that thing back pretty far. He probably, you know, didn't want to be on a poster, so decided to get out of the way.
Yeah. What did you think of Kyrie's game?
Well, he was much better tonight, right? The 10 assists are great. The 3 turnovers were sort of annoying. He had all 3 in the first half, and they were the Cavs' only 3 turnovers of the first half.
Right.
He was a somewhat inefficient 7 of 16. 3 of those shots were 3s, and he did make 7 of 9 free throws. So he ended up with a pretty good 24 points on 16 shots. But I still feel like there were a couple periods, especially in the early second quarter when James is out, or sorry, the late first quarter when James is out, where he just gets sort of tunnel vision. But, you know, look, that's you know, you take the good with the bad with Irving. And yeah, I mean, look, I can't complain about anything he did tonight. He was plus 32, for Pete's sake.
Like, yeah, exactly.
I lose credibility if I bitch about him tonight.
No, I mean, his defense, I think, especially in the second quarter, I want to say, left a little bit to be desired. But I think a lot of that was also because Fry was on the floor and JR was on the floor. And JR was not defending well outside of maybe 3 or 4 possessions today. So it looked worse because of other people and not primarily because of him.
Yeah, I guess I agree with that.
And like, he's not an all-world defender with Kyrie, right? So like, my expectation already is very low, and I think he was right about what I expected him to be. So,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, Lowry and DeRozan and Carroll didn't do much tonight anyway, so I'm not sure which of those guys Kyrie was on primarily defensively, but...
It was mostly Lowry, actually. But they kept switching a little bit, so sometimes he would end up on DeRozan. And he actually did a decent job on DeRozan, I thought.
The Cavs did a lot of trapping tonight on both Lowry and DeRozan. Did you notice that?
Yeah, they did that last year too, I think in games 5 and 6, once they realized that Lowry and DeRozan were killing them. So I think they continued with that. And it seems like a good idea because they just don't have other playmakers on the floor. Like, who else do you trust on that team, right? Like, maybe Norman Powell can make a play. Like, do you trust Damari Carroll? Do you trust Serge Ibaka? Do you trust Patrick Patterson to make a play? I don't.
Yeah. Yeah, I think trapping is probably a good strategy. Yeah, so for those who don't know, when the Raptors run a pick and roll, oftentimes the Cavs will have both defenders in the pick and roll situation stay on either Lowry or DeRozan, whoever is the ball handler, and force them to pass to someone else to create. And if you don't do it right and you don't rotate properly, that can oftentimes create a 4-on-3 situation for the remaining offensive guys on the court. But yeah, the Raptors don't have anyone like Draymond Green who can really hurt you in a 4-on-3 situation. So, yeah, I mean, I expect the Cavs to keep doing it since it was pretty, you know, so effective tonight.
Also, I think one thing the Cavs have been doing much better than they did in, I think, games 3 and 4 last year was that on the traps, the big is getting his hands out pretty far in. So, like, whenever Lowry has to pass the ball out of the trap, it often leads to a turnover just because he's so short and there's like 2 guys in front of him and both of them had their hands out. Mm-hmm. It actually leads to a lot of deflections and increased possessions for the Cavs. So if you saw, like, I think the Raptors had, how many turnovers did they have today?
Well, Lowry and DeRozan had 3 and 4 apiece. Exactly. So 7 total between those two.
Right. So them passing out of the traps did lead to a couple of turnovers, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Yeah, I expect them to keep doing that. Were you surprised that the Raptors started Jonas Valanciunas?
I was. I thought Casey was going to overreact to, I think, games 5 and games 4, 5, and 6 of the Bucks series.
Powell started games 4, 5, and 6 for the Raptors against the Bucks.
Was it 4, 5, and 6, or was it 5 and 6? Either way.
It was games, 4, 5, and 6.
Okay, yeah. So the games that he started, I thought he was going to overreact and keep that same lineup. But justifiably, he was probably worried about rebounding and some other matchup issues. So he went with Valanciunas. But yeah, Valanciunas is like, if he's not rebounding that well, and if he's not scoring efficiently, like, what's the point of having him? Like, Cavs are going to make him work on D anyway.
I was a little bit surprised by how bad he was tonight. So he got 3 post touches in the first quarter, and he like really demonstrated no ability to like execute a post move that was scary at all.
He's gotten much worse. I remember like his post efficiency used to be up near the top of the league.
Yeah.
Last couple of years, but it's gone down a lot. And it seems like, but I think part of it is that he just doesn't get consistent minutes, right? Like for the Raptors, he never plays fourth quarters. At least he doesn't end up, he's not in a part of their closing lineup at all. And generally he plays, what, 29 minutes or something?
Yeah, I mean, it could be that he's getting inconsistent minutes, but when he plays so when his play on the court is so inconsistent, it's hard to, you know, justify.
I don't know what the chicken there is, but...
Anyway, yeah, I mean, I think they started him because it's hard to imagine Valanciunas being on the court when Tristan Thompson isn't on the court, just because I don't think he can switch on the shooters enough. So, like, when they have LeBron in and 4 shooters, Valanciunas can't really do anything out on the perimeter defensively. So, you know, they probably wanted to start him just so that, you know, they for sure got him some run against Tristan at the beginning of the game and the beginning of the half. But yeah, he was bad. He finished tonight minus 21. And Norman Powell, the guy that they started instead of him in games 4, 5, and 6 of the last series, was plus 14. So Powell wasn't that great tonight. He was 3 of 11 from the field and really didn't do much. But I suspect that they'll make that switch as soon as game 2.
Also to reiterate my point, Jonas's usage rate in the regular season was 19.5%, and that was only in 26 minutes per game. So, like, he was only a part of 20% of their possessions on offense while he was only playing 25 minutes a game. So,
yeah. I mean, the NBA in some ways has sort of left him behind. He's, you know, this old style. You know, big, bulky center that, you know, can do some stuff around the hoop and then, you know, ostensibly protect the rim on defense. But yeah, that just doesn't quite fit into what a lot of NBA teams are doing these days. Anyway, I'll be interested to see what happens with him for the rest of the series. But tonight wasn't a good start.
Do you think they're going to start Norman Powell next game?
I think so. Yeah, I would bet on it.
Yeah, same here. Do you think that's a positive for the Cavs or a negative?
I don't know what it is. I mean, it's neither positive nor negative because neither of those players should really matter. But yeah, I mean, if the Cavs are forcing them into lineup changes as soon as game 2, I think that's a good thing for the Cavs. And that lineup would be awfully small with Powell starting.
Yeah, so who's going to be in the lineup? They're going to play Kyle Lowry. They're going to play DeMar DeRozan. Norman Powell, that's 3 people.
Ibaka.
And then who's the 5th? Is it going to be
Carroll was the 5th? No, Carroll was the 5th in games 4, 5, and 6 of the last series. Now, maybe they'll make another change. I'm not sure.
Yeah, so let's say Carroll is the 5th. Then who guards who? Let's think about that, right? Like, Lowry's going to be on Irving. DeMar's going to be, I guess, whoever the shooting guard for the Cavs is.
Yeah.
Who's going to guard LeBron? That's my question.
I mean, it doesn't matter. Ibaka, Carroll, probably Carroll.
Probably Carroll, okay. Then who guards Kevin?
Ibaka, and then maybe you hide Powell on...
Tristan?
You end up with a short dude on Tristan, and then that's not good.
Yeah, but then Tristan's going to get every single offensive rebound.
Right.
Literally every single one, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, they don't have a good answer for the Cavs lineup. It's a problem for them.
And the good part about having Tristan is it doesn't hurt you on the other end because he can switch out to guys, so...
Yeah, Tristan was particularly impressive tonight. He led the team in plus-minus, plus 33. He was only 3 of 8 from the field, but he was 5 of 6 from the line, including going 2 for 2. When
Hackett-Tristan began.
Yeah, they tried it Hackett-Tristan. That's the first time we've seen it in a while. And you and I have talked about how we were a little bit worried about that since Tristan's been so poor from the line. But
this is actually pretty encouraging to see because, you know, do you remember he had, what did he have, a busted hand or something?
Yes.
Yeah, so
Thumb. Wasn't it a thumb?
Thumb. Oh, so he had some sort of a hand injury, right?
Yeah.
And I was really worried that his shooting was going to be affected. Again, like, he's not a shooter or anything, but, like, he still needs to be able to make free throws at above 50% for the other team to not want to go to Hackettrison.
Yeah.
And I thought at least seeing him make 5 out of 6 was very encouraging.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's 6 free throws. Like, I'm probably like a 30% free throw shooter, and there have been times in my life I've done 5 or 6.
Sure.
But
if his hand was busted, I would imagine it.
Yeah,
he's still able to make 5 out of 6, right?
And it's better than 1 out of 6. So, because
Like he hadn't made free throws for like I think he missed his last 4 in the last game of the season, and then he missed his first 2 in the. At the beginnings of the playoffs or something. So I was really worried that his hand would have been a huge problem going forward.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's not the case right now. So,
yeah, I think he's okay. I don't know. He's been rebounding like a
theme, he looked better on defense, and he also looked better rebounding the ball. He had a nice block today, I think.
Yeah. He had...
Definitely one block, if I remember, no?
Says he had 0, but he had 2 steals.
Maybe they counted it as a steal. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? We can write the official score.
Yeah.
The Cavs had a 100% win probability according to unpredictable.com with 6:13 left in the fourth, and LeBron didn't come out until 3:18, I think. Do we care?
No, it's fine.
I don't care either.
You only play 41 minutes. That's fine.
Right. I agree. I just wanted to see if I could rabble rouse a little bit, but you're not biting, unfortunately.
No, like I mentioned before, I just don't care that much about minutes. I mean, of course, like if you're playing LeBron 48 minutes a night every single game, that's a problem. But 43, 44, finish the series as quickly as possible.
Yeah. PJ Tucker had an interesting night. He played 25 minutes. He was only -1. Part of that is because he played a little bit at the end when the Raptors went on that run in garbage time. But part of it is he was 6 of 11, and he was 1 of 4 from 3, but
took three, so long twos.
3 of his 6 makes were 2s where he had 1 frickin' toenail on the line. And, you know, all 3 of those should have been 3s, but he just couldn't quite get behind the line. I thought he played okay. There's been a lot of discussion about like, oh, you know, he's not the LeBron stopper that everyone said he was. Look, to my knowledge, no one actually said he's a LeBron stopper. They just said look, this guy is like a somewhat decent defender. And if you can provide a little bit of resistance to LeBron, that's helpful. But
is it though? Wouldn't you rather just have a better offensive player? Because I think it's all about, it's all about the marginal benefit you get about playing these guys, right? That's what I think about defending Steph Curry too. Like, how much better are you going to get by having, you know, like a +2 RPM defensive RPM player instead of a +3 defensive RPM player? Like, is it really going to make that much of a difference on these guys? Wouldn't you be just better off?
I'm not sure. I mean, so conceptually, RPM should work.
But it doesn't look
figuring out calculations
right.
Like that. I know, but conceptually,
it's an average team player.
Conceptually, a +3 defensive RPM guy should be 3 points better per game than a 0 guy. And it's an interesting question, right? Is a +3 defensive RPM guy still +3 against Steph, or is he actually more, or is he actually less on average? I'm not sure how it works once you get to the edges of performance. I think what you're speculating is that the elite offensive players are affected by good defensive players less.
Absolutely. That's my point. Yeah,
that might be right. I mean, don't you think that like when LeBron goes against elite defenders like Kawhi and Draymond, he struggles a little bit more?
LeBron scored. Okay, last time in the playoffs when LeBron went against Kawhi, he had a 68 true shooting percentage, 28 points per game.
Okay. All right, ignore me then. I feel like there have been times, and look, maybe this is just anecdotal, and this is a big problem with like watching games, is like you get these ideas in your mind that are actually wrong. Haven't there been games where like Kawhi or series?
In the regular season, yes, I agree. But in the playoffs, LeBron has just not struggled that much in general. Last time I saw him struggling was when Kyrie and Kevin Love went down, and he was basically playing with Dele, Tristan Thompson, and Timofey Mozgov as his starters.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the only time I saw him not shoot well from the floor.
What about when Curry has elite defensive player Matthew Dellavedova on him, and he seems to play worth? Okay.
Two and a half.
Enough on that. Yeah, I think that's actually an interesting question. I'm not sure what the answer to that is, but
and I'm not saying that's the case for every single player. Of course, on some players, better defender is going to have even a better effect. It could be magnified, but I think on these elite offensive players like LeBron and like Steph Curry, I just don't know how much of a advantage you're getting by subbing out for defense instead of offense. Maybe you're just better off having better offensive players and running with that.
Yeah, I mean, let's see. LeBron, what did LeBron do tonight? LeBron had 35 points on 13 of 23 shooting. He was 7 of 8 from the line. He made 2 threes, 10 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 turnovers, a steal and a block. He was plus 16. We'll get to why he was, quote-unquote, only plus 16. But yeah, I mean, his true shooting percentage tonight was 63, which is elite, but inside the realm of elite.
Was it 63? How was it?
Yeah, 63. Okay. According to Unpredictable. And yeah, I mean, if that's what being a LeBron style, I mean, maybe if PJ Tucker wasn't as good as he was, LeBron would have had 42 points on, 73% true shooting. Who knows? I mean, look, it's just impossible to know when there's sample size issues here.
Actually, I just calculated it again. Because I know there was a couple of and ones. So it was 67. But anyway.
Really? Why doesn't Predictable say it's 65%?
Because it's using that formula that tries to account for and ones, right? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because the way true shooting percentage is calculated is by it assumes that you have a certain number of and ones. Because it doesn't know. It's not looking at that.
Okay.
Every single
All right. Time. You're calculating true shooting percentage.
Yeah, I'm calculating the actual true shooting percentage.
Not the true shooting percentage.
Because like if you watch the game, you can figure this out.
No, I know. I know. It's just a bit esoteric. So, yeah, I mean, who knows? Anyway, PJ Tucker was okay. He also had 11 rebounds.
Somebody has to grab him.
Yeah, that's true. Did you think, so the free throw disparity tonight was a little bit interesting. The Cavs shot 9 more free throws, and I can't remember where it finished, but at some point Toronto had like 10 more points in the paint.
Problem with them, though, is that they take so many long twos, right? Like, think about all the, DeRozan had, 16 shots? How many of those were three? How many of those were inside the paint? I think, remember, like, maybe 3 or 4 were good layups and stuff. Yeah. You take so many long twos, like, what do you want to say?
Yes.
Even Ibaka was taking long twos today. He was making them, but that's fine.
Yeah, when I looked at Ibaka's box score at the end of the game, I was a little bit surprised. He was 3 of 3 from three, but he was only 6 of 14 overall and ended up minus 14. I guess it was because during that 19-3 run and in the second quarter, the Raptors went on a 19-3 run, and they also went on a 10-2 run in the third quarter and somehow lost this game by 11. But yeah, during those runs, Ibaka was sort of a big part of them. So I think I'm just sort of in my mind imagining he had a better game than he did. But yeah, he wasn't very good. He had only 6 rebounds. That is not that efficient offensively.
Yeah, and Cavs were also doubling their guys who are the ones who typically shoot free throws, right? So if you think about it that way, it's just hard for them to get too many free throws.
Yeah.
Because if they're trapping Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan, who the hell is going to shoot free throws?
Right. No one. Norman Powell, I guess.
Yeah.
No one. No one is the answer. Kevin Love played 32 minutes, which is a little bit interesting. He was 5 of 13 from the field for 18 points. He did make, I think, 2 corner threes and 1 above the break three. Still not shooting very well. Are you concerned? Or are you more concerned?
50% from three. That seems fine to me. You mean like overall?
Yeah.
What was his true shooting percentage?
I don't know. 5 of 13 from the field. 3 of 6 from 3.
7 true shooting. Yeah. I mean, it's fine. He played 32 minutes. I mean, I have nothing to add on that one. He was fine. He was good. Like, he had 9 rebounds. He was very good defensively, I thought, today. Compared to, like, what expectations are in general for him.
I thought so, too. There was some chatter on Twitter about this. You know, Love is probably never going to be an elite defender, but I don't really grit my teeth and wring my hands over his defense anymore. You know, he does what he can with what he has, and he's pretty good at maximizing his defensive presence given his athletic ability.
Yeah. And I thought they were doing, again, like I mentioned before, their hands were active when they were trapping the ball. So that's why I think Kevin and Tristan both had 2 steals each.
Yeah.
And even Kyrie got a couple, so.
In terms of negative things from tonight, there's really only one thing, and I think I have a good excuse for it. The Cavs bench tonight, the unit where it's sort of LeBron and the 4 shooters, and lately that's been Shumpert, Deron Williams, Kyle Korver, and Channing Frye. That lineup played very poorly tonight. Shumpert was minus 16, Deron Williams was minus 18, Channing Frye was minus 19. And those guys were 1 of 2, 0 of 2, and 1 of 3 from 3. I think they were just sort of unlucky offensively and that they missed some open shots. And defensively, they've never been a great unit defensively. And tonight, I thought the Raptors got sort of particularly lucky during the stretch when they were on the floor. So those two things combined, unlucky offense and unlucky defense, made it look like those guys were worse than they were. Did you have a different read?
No, I absolutely agree. And I think the best defense for that lineup is just making their own shots. Because if they make their own shots, the other team doesn't get a long rebound. They can't run out on the break, and they essentially have to take the ball out of the basket. So
right. And it gives them a little bit more time to get back and play
exactly.
defense.
Exactly. And again, the league is much more higher variance now. For example, I think the Cavs took more threes than twos in their first half. So like if you're taking that many threes, you're going to have a high variance essentially when it comes to your offense. So
Yeah. And in the first quarter and third quarter, they were going in and they, you know, got out to, you know, multiple sort of high teens, low 20s leads. And yeah,
I kind of asked you this on GChat, but do you think this is going to mean negative for the Stars who have to play heavy minutes just because now leads will evaporate so quickly, which means you essentially have to leave your guys out for long periods of time?
That's an interesting thought, right? Okay, so your hypothesis is because the NBA is becoming a increasingly three-point shooting league, the ability for teams to string a few threes in a row and bite into leads is increased. Now, they could also fall behind faster, but they can in general, they could take big chunks out of lead. They're more likely to take a big chunk out of a lead. And as such, you might be tempted to play your starters more because, you know, you're afraid of those kinds of leads. That's an interesting thought. I think the Cavs basically all season played very scared in fourth quarters.
I agree.
They would often be up like 24 points and LeBron would still come out to start the fourth quarter. I don't know if that's because of what you're saying. I think that's because they feel incompetent without James out there with the bench bunch. But in any case, it's an interesting theory. I don't know. It's something to watch.
Yeah, it's something to just keep an eye on for next season and the season after that. But I think that'll be the case if all the starters aren't playing heavy minutes, then you have no incentive to do that, right? Because the other team can lose leads as quickly as you can gain them too. So like it can go both ways. So like if nobody is playing their starters heavy minutes, then it's probably fine to not do that. But if like let's say one team decides that, okay, we're just going to start playing our guys heavy minutes, and then they can probably get some sort of additional benefit from that.
Yeah. On to something slightly more fun. Did you see the LeBron James fake drinking the beer?
Yeah, I thought he was actually going to take a sip for a second.
I thought he was too. I was like, whoa.
Is there a fine if he does that, though? Like, I don't know.
I have no idea. I mean, I'm guessing it's unprecedented, at least on TV. I know there's rumors that players used to drink at halftime, but I don't know if a player is...
in front of a national audience?
Yeah. I think in alcohol commercials, they're not allowed to be seen actually drinking the beer. Wait, maybe that's not right.
We
see people drinking beers in like Miller Lite commercials where everyone's all young and attractive at the bar. In any case, look, I have no idea. But he didn't actually drink it. I think that bottle, I forensically analyzed this very carefully. I think that beer might have actually been empty because the person who was carrying it was one of the arena staff. And she was sort of carrying it out, I think. So I think it was an empty.
Yeah, who knows?
So anyway, barely escaped a game 2 suspension for LeBron James there. But anyway, that was a fun moment, I thought.
The funnest moment still remains when Manu Ginobili grabbed the bat in front of 20,000 people.
Yeah, that arena in San Antonio is nuts. Like, apparently, you know, like, the heat goes out all the time. And apparently there's bats flying around, like, fairly often.
And snakes and something. And snakes or something.
Yeah, snakes in the locker room. Yeah. Yeah. But
there's still a conspiracy theory that Greg Popovich specifically instructed the arena to kill the air conditioning system for game one of the 2014 finals.
Right. That was the one where LeBron cramped.
Yeah, and like, I think the last quarter.
Yeah. And that game was pretty close, and San Antonio sort of eked out.
Oh, yeah,
it was tied
before he got cramped, and then it turned
I don't think it was
like
intentional, because it happened before the game, but in any case. I want to address something that... I wanted to address DeMar DeRozan versus Kyle Lowry, but do you have anything else you want to talk about this game first?
So what adjustments would you like to see from the Cavs? Preemptive adjustments, because obviously they won the game, so they don't technically have to do anything, but yeah, it's better to be one step ahead, right?
Yeah, I agree. I liked the trapping. I think there's going to be some chatter about Richard Jefferson not playing at all today, and I would like to see Shumpert continue to get those minutes for now. I think that Shumpert, when he's playing defense well, has a higher ceiling than Jefferson. And just for now, I'm willing to sort of lower. I think that Jefferson on average might be better than Shumpert, but Shumpert's ceiling is higher.
Yeah,
so by playing Shumpert, they're actually sort of increasing their performance variance. But I think they should continue to do that to see like what's going on with Shumpert and try to get a good feel for that.
Do you think, actually, so my question was, why not just sub Jefferson out for Fry and go small?
You don't think you'd... I mean, Fry was pretty good in the first round.
He was great in the first round, but my question is, defensively, he's just a sieve. Again, yeah. I guess maybe if he hits his shots,
then
everything looks much better, but who knows?
He is a bit of a sieve defensively, but I think that his height makes it so that... And look, he's a better three-point shooter, and his height makes it so that he can get his shot off a bit better. Right. But it's a thought. I mean, that's something they can mess with. I guess my adjustment would be essentially not to make an adjustment. I think that the Raptors are going to try to adjust. I would let them do that and, you know, sort of like walk themselves into trouble. And I think there will be a little bit of temptation to maybe tinker with the LeBron plus shooters bench lineup that they've been doing in the sort of beginning of the second and fourth quarters. But I don't think they should tinker with that. I think they should just chalk today up to unlucky shot making by the Raptors and unlucky shot missing by the Cavs and keep going with it.
Yeah.
Is there anything you think they should do?
Yeah, my only issue with those lineups is that they have Fry, Kyle Korver, and Deron Williams in at the same time. Like, I really don't think that lineup will ever be even decent defensively. Of course, if they keep making their shots, it's not going to matter.
Right.
But tonight was bound to happen, right? Like, you're going to have nights when they can't even make their shots. But then I think as long as Lou is very quick to sub those guys out, then it's okay to keep trying it. But yeah, Don't stick to something if it's not working, just because these guys can go cold pretty quickly and then it's going to look pretty bad like it did tonight.
Yeah. Shooting is weird. People get on streaks and teams get on streaks, and it's hard to know. It's hard to like recognize those in prospect. But yeah, I mean, if they've missed two in a row and the other team's, you know, going on a little bit of a run, it's scary because
these guys, you know, have no chance of defending anyone.
So. Right. And each incremental miss sort of like builds momentum for the other team.
Because these are long misses, which usually lead to long turnovers, which usually lead to transition points, something Cavs are particularly bad at defending. So,
yeah. Yeah. Any other adjustments?
Let's see. J.R. Smith needs to try harder on those screens, to be honest with you.
Like, we have not mentioned his name today yet, but yeah.
Yeah. I thought he was pretty bad defensively for the most part. There were a couple of possessions where he did defend DeRozan well, but for the most part, he was just dying on those screens. And yeah, like, he and Kyrie specifically, whenever they put those guys in a screen together or in a pick and roll together, something bad ends up happening. And yes, DeRozan was basically getting wide open lanes to the basket. I think it was the second quarter, I want to say. But one of those was stunted by LeBron getting a nice steal.
I've often thought if I was an opposing coach, I would just try for like the first five possessions of a game to do Irving Smith pick and roll. So the guy who Irving is on is the ball handler, and the guy who is being guarded by Smith sets a pick, and then just like watch those two ineptly deal with the pick. I just feel like that would work, but I've never seen teams like try to abuse that in the way that I would think would be an interesting thing to try. So
they tried it today and it worked for the most part. I thought I still need to see the numbers on synergy, but at least to my eye, it looked.
Why
like
not
it
run
was
it
working.
Every time though? Like I don't.
I mean, understand. At some point the Cavs will adjust, and
yeah.
You have to remember that the coaches overreact more than we do.
Yeah.
So, like, if they see something that doesn't work twice, they're just not going to go back to it.
Right. Yeah, like, yeah, Tristan Thompson made his two free throws, and that was it for Hakka.
Exactly. Like, if you're going to do that, you have to do it consistently, right? It's not going to work in small sample sizes. That is only useful in a large sample size.
The Cavs had 85 shooting possessions tonight, or they had 85 field goal attempts, and... Even if you took all 15 of those free throws, and there were some and ones in there, but yeah, I'm guessing the Cavs had like maybe 97 possessions, something like that.
Yeah.
And they scored 116 points. Yeah, I mean, just fouling Tristan makes sense every time. I don't understand. Because the expected value of a possession where he shoots free throws is one.
What do you think his free throw percentage is, though? Do you think it's 50?
I think his true free throw percentage is probably like 58, something like that.
Okay. So it's like borderline then, right? 120?
Yeah, and also, you know, there's some other confounding variables, right? Like you get an incremental foul. You have the chance of not getting the offensive rebound. So it's not perfect, but, you know, there's a chance of not getting the offensive rebound on the defensive rebound on a shot too. So
sure.
I'm not sure where it's worse. But you also take away the chance of getting a steal.
And also, what about getting LeBron more rest? Because he's essentially at that point doing nothing.
Yeah. For possessions. A tweet about that, I think by Conrad, or maybe it was, I can't remember. But yeah, somebody was saying that, yeah, I mean, whenever you intentionally foul someone, you give LeBron an offensive possession off where he can catch his breath. And when he's playing, you know, mid 40s minutes per night, that can make a difference. Anyway, yeah, it's sort of an interesting thing. But in any case, if you decide you're going to do it once, I don't understand why you wouldn't do it a few times.
I think the only way to beat the Cavs is by making LeBron work as much as possible so that he's tired by the end of the fourth. And then he's settling for shots and or you're forcing Kyrie Irving to be a playmaker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a strategy. I mean, you can try and outscore him.
I mean, but it may work for him.
There's only like two teams that...
Yeah, maybe like even one or two. Yeah, the Rockets maybe and the Warriors that it might work for. That's it.
Yeah. Okay. Apparently, I need to relitigate the DeMar DeRozan versus Kyle Lowry thing. I got a number of people on Reddit and two or three tweets yelling at me for saying that Lowry is better than DeRozan. I didn't realize that there was confusion about this.
Is that really
but
a controversial topic?
Apparently. So one of the things I saw was that I claim to be an advanced stats guy, but I don't even know that DeRozan's player efficiency rating is higher than Lowry's.
And is that really an advanced stat somebody wants to talk?
It is true. DeMar DeRozan's player efficiency rating this year, amazingly, was 24, and Kyle Lowry's was 22.9. But... yeah, and then I think also, what else did Lowry do better? DeRozan had slightly more points per game. So DeRozan had 27.3 points per game this year, and Lowry had 22.4. But, I mean, that's sort of it for things that DeRozan does better. In terms of plus-minus, Kyle Lowry was +6 per game this year. DeMar DeRozan was +2. And, you know, one of the issues with plus minus is that it's context dependent. But yeah, by real plus minus, Kyle Lowry was the 10th best player in the NBA. And DeMar DeRozan was the 128th best player in the NBA. If in terms of like box score things, so player efficiency rating is one of these sort of aggregate box score things. But it's sort of fallen out of favor, and I think people prefer box plus minus now. And DeRozan's box plus minus was 0.9, and Lowry's box plus minus was 6.6. Win shares, Vorp, everything. Lowry is like blows DeRozan out of the water. DeRozan is sort of one thing. I mean, he's bad defensively as well. DeRozan is one thing. He is a sort of slightly above average efficiency volume scorer. And that has some value, but that value places him as about like the 100th best player in the NBA. And Lowry is like one of the very best, most elite players in the NBA. So yeah, I'm just sort of confused by anyone who's confused about that.
Now, to be fair, Lowry has had issues in the past in the playoffs, but DeRozan's even been worse. So you can't even use that argument.
Yeah, and I think we addressed that in our last show. Like Lowry, it has been confusing how sort of mediocre Lowry has been in the playoffs. But yeah, Lowry's been at least as mediocre. And
DeRozan has the worst field goal percentage, I think, of anybody with that high of a usage in the playoffs ever.
Yeah, it's just brutal.
The problem is field goal percentage is not great for someone like Lowry because he takes a lot of threes. DeRozan doesn't take any threes. So his field goal percentage is a pretty good predictor of what his efficiency is.
Yeah. So anyway, I just wanted to address that really quickly. It shouldn't really need to be addressed for people who listen to the show with any regularity. So let's just move on. I heard that Deron Williams has lost 10 pounds since joining the Cavs.
Yeah,
did you know that?
Mentioned that on the broadcast.
Yeah. That's sort of encouraging.
Was it reported at all before, or did somebody?
I have no idea. Marv Albert said it. So I'm guessing that what happens is the TV guys get a little bit of exposure to the players, and somebody mentioned that in passing. He still looks like a tank to me, but.
I mean, he's playing better. Is that because of the weight? Who knows?
Yeah. He didn't play great tonight.
In general, like he plays within the flow of the offense. There was a couple of possessions where he dominated the ball too much, but for the most part, he's fine.
Yeah. He ended up to a five. Took 1 3 that I didn't love, but based on how we played in the first round, like I'm sort of willing to forgive him the heat check.
He had the 4 assists in 17 minutes. I mean, that's fine with me.
Yeah, I agree. It's been a great find. Would you prefer Deron Williams or Matthew Dellavedova?
Who? For the contracts? I'll take Deron
Williams. No, let's just say you needed to pick a guy for the rest of the playoffs. And if Deli were here, he'd be, properly integrated in.
Yeah, I don't know. Because Deli didn't play in the finals at all.
Right. And it seems like Deron will.
Maybe he gets injured. Who knows? Yeah, I think it's a wash, honestly. I don't know. I think Deron's better in terms of shooting, because I know Deli was a good three-point shooter, but it was only wide-open threes, and it was pretty much only like standstill wide-open threes. He can't take anything off the dribble. So that was a big limitation on his game. And he couldn't shoot from the mid-range, which was really odd.
It was odd. Deli had that nice sort of Tristan Thompson pick and roll.
Yeah, but Deron does that with LeBron too, so like that's an advantage for him. Defensively, obviously, Deli was much better. Deron seems pretty old, but I think, I think it's a wash, honestly. It's on the fringes of what would make a difference anyway. So, I don't know.
Okay. I think it's pretty close, too. I don't have a strong opinion on it, which makes it a good question, I guess.
Yeah.
That does remind me of one more thing I wanted to talk about today's game. So in the fourth quarter, when they did the LeBron plus shooters lineup, they switched it so that instead of having Channing Frye out there, they put Tristan Thompson out there. Did you notice that?
Yeah, I did, because they realized Frye was getting killed. So they just...
Yeah. And it worked pretty well, actually.
Yeah.
Tristan was able to sort of patch the hole defensively that Frye was leaving.
Frye was a minus 19 tonight, the worst on the team.
The consequence was Thompson ended up with 38 minutes played, but...
He can take that. That's fine.
Yeah.
These guys played 4 games in the last 20-something days, so they'll be fine.
Right. Yeah, 4 games since April 9th, I think.
Yeah. JR's game? Because I feel like we still haven't talked about it too much.
Yeah, look, he was 2 of 4. I think maybe all 4 of his attempts were threes. Two rebounds and assist. He played 22 minutes, 6 points. He was plus 15, but his defense was left a little to be desired.
And I also thought he had some bad shot selection, which is kind of his trademark at this point, but you can do better, man. There, yeah. I don't know if you remember this three, but on the he was on the corner and he pretty much had a good look at the basket and he waited for somebody to close out on him. He pump faked again and then he stepped back and he took a three and it completely airballed him.
Yes, I know exactly what was going through his head there. He got the ball. He was open. For some reason, his confidence isn't great right now, so he didn't shoot it. He put the ball on the floor, and at that point, he was like, shit, I was supposed to shoot that. Yeah. So then he like puts on this weird move and puts up like a contested three. And yeah, I don't remember if he airballed it.
Oh, it was airball, yeah. Okay. I remember this.
And it's just...
shoot it when you're open, man. Who cares?
Yeah. He's a little bit of an emotional mess right now.
He's a very emotionally dependent player. Like for him, whatever you want to call it, like emotional psyche, emotional rhythm is really important. So like when the Cavs are doing well, he's doing well too. And like everybody's having fun. But like when the Cavs are down, his body language is just terrible usually.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I am very concerned about J.R. Smith. I remember when he was super awesome last season. And it's a little frustrating seeing this sort of shell of a guy. And I don't have much confidence that he's going to get back to where he was. The question is, can he play 25 minutes a night and provide enough defense and offense to sort of tread water? And I don't know what the answer to that question is. And the Cavs have a couple... I mean, look, they have like basically 3.5 more weeks to figure that out.
I thought Kyle Korver was pretty bad tonight, too. I know he had two threes, but he also missed two pretty easy ones on the corners. But also, more importantly, I thought he was defending pretty poorly.
Yeah.
He didn't seem to be executing the switches or the traps that well. And he was also falling back a lot and not providing any resistance. I don't expect him to be too physical on guys, but I expect him to be in the right place at the right time. And
there
I feel like
play.
He wasn't today.
There was a play where it was a transition defense situation, and he was back in time, but somebody just ran past him, and it's like, that's a little bit frustrating.
Yeah. LeBron had a couple of plays where I thought he stayed on the offensive side to whine to the refs too much and didn't come back in transition, but it's fine in the first game of the second round. If it's game 7 of the finals, then I'll have a problem, but... If you remember correctly, in Game 7 of last year's finals, Steph Curry was the one whining to the officials and LeBron was actually running back. So,
yeah, I mean, there's never a good time to be complaining to the refs. Actually, I disagree with that.
Maybe in the regular.
Yeah, actually, I disagree with the thing that 15 seconds ago Mija said. There are good times to complain to the refs, and I think LeBron is fairly good at working the refs, but... right after you've committed a turnover is not one of those times.
Yeah, and in a playoff game especially, right? Like in the regular season, who cares, right? Doesn't matter that much.
But. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, that's a small nit to pick on LeBron's sublime performance tonight.
Are you still surprised that he can get that high up at the age of 32?
Yes. Yeah, no, I need to prepare like probably like a 20-minute sonnet about how impressed I am with what LeBron James is doing. And this is not the time for that. But yeah, in short, I am shocked that the Cavs sort of I don't know what the right word here is, incompetent or malfeasant or just terrible mismanagement of his minutes over the last three seasons. I am shocked that has not shown up on the court yet.
And it will at some point, and then we'll wonder whether we could have extended that timeline or not.
But I think some will wonder. I won't. But for now, it appears that he had the highest peak in terms of physical athleticism. He had the earliest rise, the highest peak, and from what we've seen so far, the longest and slowest decline. It's really sort of shocking. This isn't unprecedented. Jerry Rice in the NFL was the best wide receiver of all time, and he was also the oldest wide receiver of all time. So, you know, maybe LeBron is gonna be like that. We'll see. But yeah, I mean, what he can still do is spectacular.
Just to remind people, he's already played more minutes than Michael Jordan ever did combined in playoffs and regular season.
And LeBron, or Michael, retired for the final time, I think, when he was 38.
Yeah, so like LeBron's already 6 years ahead of most people.
Crazy. Yeah. Paul Pierce retired.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. There wasn't a lot of fanfare surrounding it, so I kind of didn't pay too much attention.
I mean, he retired 2 years ago, but yeah. He finishes he's 15th all-time in scoring and fourth in three-pointers made, which surprised me a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, he was a little ahead of his time. He was fairly efficient from three-point range, so
yeah,
made perfect sense. What did you think of his early battles with LeBron?
They were great. I wish that 2009 had gone differently.
Yeah, but I feel like LeBron fighting with Paul Pierce and those Boston Celtics actually helped improve his own game. I think he fixed a lot of stuff after 2010 that has actually helped him now. So who knows, maybe if he doesn't have those battles struggle with these guys. Yeah, if he doesn't struggle with these guys, maybe he's a different player today. And maybe he doesn't have that long tail that he has right now.
Yeah, I mean, LeBron is just, you know, the sum of the experiences in his life, and so far so good. It's hard to know what has made him such a, you know, poster child for efficiency, but, you know, whatever it was, you know, here we are, and he's just incredible.
Do you
think, go ahead.
He should be a Hall of Fame player, right? I'm sure you
agree. Paul Pierce, yeah, everybody's in the NBA Hall of Fame. So, yeah, I mean, like, Reggie Miller's in the NBA Hall of Fame.
Reggie Miller, actually, I think, has a pretty good case. He was very efficient. Do you remember? You should look up his true shooting percentages. He was way ahead of his time, to be honest with you. I was very surprised when I looked up his numbers.
All right, I'll do that. Yeah. But I don't think I'm going to be surprised. It's not that he wasn't a good volume scorer.
And efficient, very efficient.
All right, hold on. All right. Reggie Miller, true shot. Wow. Holy smokes. 61.4% true shooting for his career.
Yeah, exactly. That's really good.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Okay. That is... Okay. So, all right. He was a supremely efficient volume shooter. Yep.
And his three-point attempt rate, for the most part, if you look at it, was 40, near like 37 for the career. But like in his later seasons, it was around 40 and sometimes even 50.
Right.
Like almost half of the shots were coming from three.
Yeah, you're right. It's the three rebounds and three assists per game for his career.
Yeah, he's basically Klay Thompson with like maybe a little worse defense, but that's basically
significantly worse defense, but yeah. And not as high volume scoring.
Yeah. No, I think Klay Thompson's a better player, but I think Reggie Miller was kind of ahead of his time when like a lot of people just weren't that efficient to begin with.
So I also think Klay Thompson is a better player, but I think some people would really, really scoff at that in advanced analytics circles.
Oh, really? Okay. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious that Klay is a better player, but...
I do too, but I think it's obvious that Kyle Lowry is better than DeMar DeRozan. Like, Reggie Miller is just more famous and is sort of thought of as like the, you know, grandfather of the three-pointer.
One thing about Reggie, though, is he had a pretty ridiculous run in terms of consistency and also in terms of just how many years he played. Like, he played pretty well up until he was like 36, 37.
He did, and he was never hurt.
Who knows what Klay's going to look like after 30, but...
Right. The fewest games he ever played was 70. The second fewest was 74. The third fewest was 76. Like, he just... I mean, he was really healthy.
Exactly. And Klay's been healthy, too, to be fair, so who knows where he... where he's going to end up. But I think Klay has a better peak, though.
I do, too. Yeah, I mean, I like Klay Thompson better. Did you see the Isaiah Thomas dental work?
I didn't watch... Was it last game?
Yeah.
Was it the Wizards game? No, I didn't see that game. So I knew something happened to his teeth because like everybody was tweeting about it, but...
Yeah, I missed that game, but I have seen the replay, and it's amazing. He gets sort of elbowed in the mouth... And they got it on the like 60 frame per second camera so they could show it in like super slow-mo. And yeah, you see this like tooth just come flying out of his mouth and like
was it
super slow-mo across the court.
Was it chipped or did the whole thing just come out of
it? It looks like the whole tooth. Look, I have to be honest here. I saw about half of that replay. I was like, all right, I'm turning this off. I don't need to, I need to eat sometime today. But Yeah, I think it was the whole tooth. And then apparently he spent, he didn't practice today because he was at the dentist all day.
Yeah, I mean, he has to get an implant now, which is actually pretty annoying because, I mean, I don't have one, but I know people who have one and it's really hard to take care of.
Yeah, well, maybe should, I don't know if he was wearing a mouth guard or not, but.
Yeah. I have a question for you. Do you think, what do you think of this idea? This was floated around, I think, a couple of weeks ago on Twitter. What do you think of the idea of letting the top seeds in the playoffs pick their own first round opponents? So the first team would get first chance at picking their opponent. The second seed would get the second chance and so on and so forth.
It'd be interesting. It would certainly be like a really good TV moment. So
yeah, because you can do I don't know, maybe you send representatives to some place, or like maybe you have a timer, like you're on the clock or something, and then you have 2 minutes to decide who you want to pick, and then the next team gets the next chance.
What if a team, I guess it would be, no, it would be possible. Could a team pick a team that had a better record than them? No, because one would pick first and they have the best record.
Yeah, exactly.
So that would be impossible. And then what do you do for the second round?
Oh, at that point, it's already all locked in. So once you decide...
Okay, so the bracket is set at that point.
Exactly.
I think it would be... Look, I actually think that's actually a really good idea, just because I think it would be a ratings bonanza for that. Not a bonanza, but it would be like a fun thing for the fans. And then teams could be like, oh, they didn't want to play us, you know. And it would give a bigger advantage to the one seed, right? So they could pick, like, let's say there's a six seed, but Chris Paul is hurt or something.
Exactly.
Then you can choose them, and that would be more fair than like letting the three seed, who was far inferior.
It helps the regular
season.
Like it helps.
It does. It makes teams keep trying until the end because they want to get those draft picks. It does make it so that like, if you are a 5 through 8 seed, you don't really care about seeding at all.
At the end, exactly. Because like you don't get to determine it anyway. So if you have those teams battling it out at the end, they don't have any incentive to, you know, play those
last
two games.
Maybe it's better for the guys at the top to have incentive because they're the ones that like sort of tank. And the 5 through 8, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, you're sort of trading one problem for, I think, a slightly better one there.
Yeah, I think they should try it. Who knows if it's how it's going to work out, but...
I think they should try too, because I just think it would be fun.
Yeah, I think it would make for a great TV moment, and it's also fun for the fans to speculate, oh, why didn't they choose my team? Why didn't they choose this other team?
Yeah. Oh, can you imagine the offense of like some of the players like not getting picked or being passed over?
Yeah, or being picked, right, and be like, oh, why did he pick the 5th seed and not the 8th seed?
Right, exactly. Like, oh, yeah, it's like built-in billboard material.
Exactly. Yeah, I think they should try it, but who knows? Did you perchance see that all NBA squad that got leaked?
I did see it. Brian Windhorst said that the NBA is denying that is the right list, but a couple interesting things about it. The first is, of course, the NBA would say that regardless. Second is... what's his name? Paul George is not on this list.
I think that's fair, right? Like, who would you put him above? Not above LeBron, not above Kawhi, not above Giannis for sure, not above Draymond Green, and not above Jimmy Butler. Maybe you don't think Kevin Durant played enough games.
There was a sixth guy. There was KD, right?
Yeah. But he still played 62 games, right? Or 60 games or something. And that's enough, I think, to me. He was much better than Paul George was, so...
I mean, I think Paul George probably had significantly more RPM wins added, although maybe that's not true, because Paul George was sort of... I'm going to look that up right now. Paul George was sort of bad by RPM.
Yeah, he was pretty bad by RPM, I thought. And KD wasn't that great, like not top 5 great, but he was still pretty good.
Durant had 11.92 RPM wins, and Paul George... had 9.67 RPM wins. Sorry. 9.67 RPM wins. So that's enough to convince me, because I think it was pretty close. And now that I've seen that, I think it's KD.
And even if you look at the top 5 small forward, it's LeBron, Jimmy, Kawhi, Giannis, and Kevin Durant. And these are the top 5 on the all-NBA squad, or the quote-unquote all-NBA squad.
I mean, KD is obviously the better player than Paul George, but at some point, games played matters a little bit. But... even if you include games played, Kevin Durant actually still contributed more positive value. So
my only question is, do you think Anthony Davis should be the all-team first center?
No, I think it should be Rudy Gobert. I think Rudy Gobert might actually be a slightly better player than Anthony Davis this season. I think Anthony Davis has a higher ceiling, and I would probably want Davis over Gobert, although I'm really worried about Davis's injury stuff.
Gobert has had some injury issues too, to be fair, but
he has, and especially the last week.
But Gobert, it's pretty interesting. I think he's top three defender in the league, top two defender, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. And offensively, he's improved a lot. At least he's always that lob threat, and he's pretty good around the basket. So, mm-hmm.
And it's going to be exciting watching him going forward. Like, he's got a lot of
potential to uncover.
Right.
I think it should have been Rudy Gobert there too. I think, and then my second problem was the third team guards where they had DeMar DeRozan and Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah, I mean, neither of those guys are even top 10 guards. So, but yeah, I don't want to get yelled at anymore, so we should wrap it up. Okay, so this has been episode 60 of Cavalytics. You can email us at cavalyticsnba@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at cavalyticsnba. I'll put both of those in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and we will do another show after game two. And go.